Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Long Story Short, the podcast about storytelling and connection, where we interview marketers and entrepreneurs to hear the stories they tell about their brands. I'm Jeff.
And I'm Sophia. This is a podcast by humans, for humans, who also happen to be marketers. On this week's show, our guest is Jen Holtfluer.
Jen is the chief marketing officer at Spirion, where she's responsible for global go-to-market strategy, brand, demand generation, and business development. She's an award-winning marketer known for taking the time to understand gaps in process and technology that most impact information technology and information security professionals worldwide. Her previous experiences include roles leading marketing, inside sales, and business development for Alcatel-Lucent Enterprise, Cherwell Software, BMC Software, and Dover Corporation. She's an advocate for communicating messages 7 different times in 7 different ways and holds both a master's degree and bachelor's degree in communications. She resides in the Denver area with her husband and 3 children. And when she isn't working or shuffling kids off to dance, football, or soccer, you'll find her enjoying a good campfire next to the family camper and avoiding bears in the Rocky Mountains.
While Jen never envisioned herself as a CMO, in this episode, we grow from the lessons she's learned as a leader during our remote work world, learn how she's balancing the art and science of marketing strategy, and get personal as we talk about the value of trust and mentorship.
It was great to hear from Jen on being a data-driven marketer and how to set a good example as a leader. And so without further ado, please enjoy our conversation with Jen Holtfluer. Hi, Jen. Thank you for being on the show.
Hello, Jeff and Sophia. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So we want to start in the present. And so can you tell us a little bit about what your world looks like as CMO right now at Spirion?
Yes, it changes. It changes daily. We are in the cybersecurity, data privacy, data protection space. And just because we're living in a global pandemic doesn't mean the bad guys and gals stop. So we are constantly having to work with our customers to make sure that the solutions we have are keeping them secure and allowing them to sleep better at night. So I would say, you know, in the world of marketing, it's all about keeping a pulse on the market and what our customers' needs are and making sure that we deliver, you know, those solutions to them. So that's exciting in this space, but it can change daily, you know, given we're in a very high high moving, fast paced cybersecurity space.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned how you're able to sort of take that marketing and give people whatever they need right now. But what's interesting about that is we know, having gone through your career, your goal wasn't always to be a CMO and head of marketing. So we would love to hear a little bit more about, you know, we talked about where you are right now, but how you actually got to that point.
It's such a great question that I do get asked often. And when I look back on my career, it wasn't strategically planned at all. And rarely is it. But, you know, one bit of advice that, you know, I always like to tell people when I get asked the question, you know, how did you get here? One thing I did, if I look back, is I was really good at, yes, having a mentor. But I think even more important is having good sponsors, sponsors that are those senior level executives that have a seat at the table, that once you prove yourself to them, and that can be by raising your hand and participating in a project that they have eyes and ears into, that they can help fast track you. Once they believe in you and become a champion for you, you know, that's where the advancement comes. And I've been very fortunate to have some, you know, phenomenal mentors, but as equally or maybe even more important is executive sponsors that I've proven myself to. And that's the key to, you know, making the steps up, you know, in the corporate world.
Well, and it sounds like certainly having those sponsors is great, but it also sounds like from what you're saying is also a bit of advocating for yourself to find those sponsors, right? And to frankly, to find those mentors as well.
Yeah. You can't be that person that isn't speaking up in brainstorming sessions, strategies. You've got to have a voice and you've got to have confidence. And that doesn't mean you have to be an extrovert. It means you've got to be confident in what you know, confident in your ideas, And really at the end of the day, you know, being willing to take risks too. I think there's a lot of risk taking when you're trying to prove yourself and market yourself. And there's a fine balance too, you know, between ego boosting and showing, you know, what you have done. I really think there's a fine line there, and you never want to come across as, you know, the egotistical type, but instead, you know, really promote where promotion is due of what you've done.
No, that's great. And I think that's a really powerful message. So I want to transition back, you know, so obviously cybersecurity has become more important every year. And now that we've seen sort of a complete shift in the world going virtual, I'm curious from your perspective, how that transition to everyone remote all the time has impacted really the need for cybersecurity.
Yeah. You know, I think the question you're asking is, you know, how has the rise in remote work really impacted the need for security, or in my case at Spirion, you know, data privacy? Mm-hmm. Your businesses, schools, nonprofits, you name it, you know, they have had to quickly adapt to this movement of work from home, or work to learn from home, I think is another way to say it. And if, you know, they aren't working from a secured, let's just say VPN environment, which many of them aren't, or they're given it by their IT department and don't know how to work, you know, a VPN, something as basic as that, you know, that leaves them very vulnerable to the hackers. Unfortunately, you know, like I said, the bad guys just don't stop in the middle of a pandemic. And a report back in August actually showed that data hackers and data breaches were increased by 20% just from the movement of home, of people not properly working on a secured work environment or through a VPN. So it's definitely an issue. It continues to be an issue, you know, today, where we've got to educate our folks, whether that's students, faculty, business professionals, on the importance of, if you're working off of your own home network and not from a secured network or environment, you're opening yourself up for personal information that may be on that device to get out there. And consequences and the results of that can really be quite tragic when it comes to things like your credit and all of that, when something gets stolen.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So as we talked about, you didn't necessarily aspire to or have a specific sort of strategic goal to become a CMO, but, you know, you're in the seat now. And, you know, kind of curious that being in that position, what are some of the big things that the biggest pain points keeping you up at night in your role?
Yeah, you know, it's especially in this day and age, it's really about keeping the team focused. There's so much distractions going on in our personal lives. You know, we don't know if we can go out to dinner one day. We don't know if our children are going to get transitioned to full-time e-learning. You know, so the team is, you know, very distracted, as are our customers, as is the world, right? So really keeping the team focused, how do we, you know, stay the course, is one thing that keeps me up at night. The other thing that keeps me up at night is, you know, our investors, you know, understand that we're in a, you know, recession brought on by a pandemic, but we've got to make sure our win rates are going in the right direction. So that keeps me up at night too. You know, how do we make sure that we're continuing, you know, to build revenue? And that really starts with top of funnel. So I manage not only the marketing side, but the inside sales and business development teams. And we're working on ways, you know, where, how do we enable our inside sales team to have more relevant conversations in the market, to build that business value sooner in the sales cycle that ultimately helps accelerate deal velocity and builds that business case sooner for buyers. And that's where, you know, the win rates start to head north. So it's definitely focus on my people. And it's a focus on, you know, win rates. What can we do to add greater value in those business conversations earlier on in the sales cycle?
It makes a ton of sense. And yet at the same time, it's still very refreshing to hear from a head of marketing that the first sort of metrics you mentioned are revenue and win rates, right? They're very sales focused. And so, you know, with that, and you and I have talked about this, but as a data junkie, I love to hear kind of your take on it is, how do you balance, you know, really the art and science, in, you know, the case of science being more data of marketing strategies, right? How are you able to balance that on sort of an ongoing basis?
I was having this conversation with my CEO, I think just before the holidays, and he was reminding me why I'm at Spirion. He said, "You're one of those data scientist marketers," I think is what he said. And I take that as a compliment. You know, everything that I do and that I have my team do centers around data-driven decisions. It's so important to make sure that, you know, before we decide to do some A/B testing, are we looking at the market? And when I say, are we looking at the market, there's so much that we can be looking at right now. We can collect intent to purchase signals, you know, through tools like Zoom Info. We can leverage what we're hearing from the analyst community. We do our own market third-party research that helps us, you know, drive what campaigns we should be focusing on. We look at SEO search queries. What is the market searching for? So for me, you know, balancing that science and art of marketing, it's really more of the science side, and let the data actually guide, you know, where it takes you in your not only branding focus, but also your lead gen efforts too. So it's so important to, I always say the data don't lie, and it doesn't, right? If you're tracking it regularly and interpreting it correctly.
Well, and I think the other piece that you mentioned is that you really have a really good holistic picture. I mean, it sounds like from your perspective, it's not just a small piece. And I think that's where some marketers get caught up in looking at a very narrow piece of it. But you're talking about having a finger on the pulse of the market. So, you know, when you go back to SEO search queries, like, what are they actually looking for, right? What are the analysts saying? So when you have a full picture view, and more importantly, from our perspective, when you can really be able to tell the story of then what's going on, I think it will put people in a much more comfortable place as opposed to only seeing sort of part of the picture.
Yeah. Yeah. And it, you know, we do strength finders. I don't know if you're familiar with strength finders. So I put everyone in my team through strength finders to understand, you know, what gains them and what drains them. And the majority of the folks on the team are, you know, input and learners, which are two strengths that tell you you're going to listen to what the market is saying and you're going to apply it into, you know, your efforts and your goals or MBOs. And to me, that's very important, you know, to have those two traits on a marketing team, because if you're not taking input from different sources and then compiling it and reading it and interpreting it, you know, you're making a mistake. So, very important to, you know, make sure you follow the data trails.
And I think something else that is really important that you're hitting on here is it's important what the data is telling you, but you also have to then know what to do with it from there. You know, so many people collect all of these numbers and then have them, and that's it. And that's where the road ends. And so I think we would love to hear a little bit more about, once you have those numbers, you know, how do you put the human faces back into those numbers in a world where it can maybe seem a little bit cold or scary to do that for a lot of other people?
Yeah, you know, we definitely, you know, look at any data points that we can glean and then look at using those percentages, those statistics in any of our marketing materials that will catch someone's attention. So we're big into making sure that, you know, we have some type of factual piece that we can lead with. What we also do in our inside sales team is, you know, we do have the intent signals that we look at too against our ideal customer profiles. So that's something that helps them frame up, you know, information they're already collecting from the market to have more value-driven conversations. You know, speaking of data, you know, we've gone through a very large ICP exercise back in right in the middle of the pandemic. So April, May. It was just incredibly helpful and insightful to see, boy, what our goals were beginning of the year and who we were targeting, right? Or who we could best serve, as I prefer to say, changed so much. You know, verticals like brick and mortar retail, which are highly regulated, which is something that Spirion provides a service for, were hit very, very hard. You know, we had to quickly pivot to online retail as a way to target. And we We saw that through the ICP exercise and research that we did in looking at, you know, who can use what we do. Take a historical look at the data of who we've, you know, historically sold to, but we had to have an aspirational element to our ICP work, which was really important, so that as our SDR team, as our marketing inbound team was putting together the programs, they actually had the data to support what should those conversations be that we need to be on and what do we need to be speaking to help solve for.
Yeah.
And that's such a great point, because a lot of companies, if they do sort of more of an exercise just around who are their ideal customers, Jen, to your point, you'll end up obviously having it look very similar to the way it does today. But I love the way you bring in sort of the aspirational focus and some of those intent signals to say, well, where is our business going, right? Based on what we think it's going to be, who does these products, who do they best serve, and who will that be in the future? So I think being able to weave all of that together is a really powerful way to sort of put the message out in the market.
Yeah. One thing that my director of inside sales, Melissa Murillo, will have a conversation. So what subsegments is, you know, working for the SDRs? We'll pull data from Salesforce. What's working? And she'll say, oh, you mean our moving target that changes every week of what's spiking as far as who needs that data protection, data privacy? They're watching it so closely every day that, you know, we've been able to drill into, and this probably won't be a surprise to you or any of the listeners, but, you know, with all of us in quarantine and somewhat of a lockdown, retail vendors like Home Depot, Lowe's, where people are going and making home improvements to their home where they can actually buy something, get home and do it. They're spiking right now when it comes to, data protection and personal identifiable information being collected. Same thing with recreational activities, anything to do with outdoor activities, people, you know, camping, people wanting to go fishing. Those types of retails are the ones that are I hate to say benefiting, but that's where people are going. I share that because it's really, when you think about ICP, a lot of people will do it once or twice a year and then really stick to it. In our current market conditions, you just can't do that because of the dynamics changing in the market so often.
Yeah, those moving targets only moving faster.
Exactly.
So shifting gears a little bit from the data side into your position more specifically, we know both a value that you have and Spirion has is workplace quality for their employees. And so we would love to hear a little bit more about how you feel is so important, the balance in workplace, and how you set that tone as a leader for your department.
I am really proud that we were nominated and actually mentioned and won the award of, you know, top 25 companies where women want to work.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That was from Sales Hacker. Lauren Bailey leads that organization, for those familiar. And one of the reasons that we won, it was a vote, you know, it was they put all the companies that were nominated and they let, you know, the public vote. And they gave us some data, speaking of data, back as to why we won. And, you know, the top reason that we won was our employees are given that healthy schedule. I don't really like to say healthy balance because there's really nothing balancing right now. But, you know, we've got a lot of working parents. We've got a lot of, you know, singles that, you know, have other things that they want to get done outside of, the working environment. And if you're achieving what you need to be achieving, you won't find a more flexible place to work than Spirion. I learned that a long time ago where, you know, the one thing that, you know, employees want is, you know, flexibility. And that flexibility may not be, I want to work from, you know, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. or whatever the hours are, but there's that flexibility of, I want to actually work from a coffee shop where there's noise that I can actually use that help me be productive. There's just that flexibility. And that's something that's part of our core values at Spirion. And for me, you know, I have started to ask the question when I do my one-on-ones with my team, how are you doing? You know, and when people respond with good, I say, let's ask that question again. How are you really doing? Because I'm a working mom and my kids just got shifted back to home and I'm trying to shuffle homework and meal prep and just having distractions with children being home. I'm not okay or good. I'm dealing with it and I'm making do with it. How are you? I always try to give an example of what's going on in my life. I'm a very transparent person, so that people will feel comfortable to know that it's not always good. It's probably more bad than it is good right now. And that's okay. But we're in this together. And let's go through what you've got to get done. And let's prioritize and get that focus in order. So that's really how I address it, you know, is through my leadership style and how Spirion has come to win awards like, you know, best places to work.
Yeah. And I think that's really important too, that people understand you're not just asking as a pleasantry and expecting them to say good and then moving on with the conversation. Like there is a genuine concern and interest for how are you doing, which is something I think more people need to fully be aware of.
Yeah, absolutely.
One thing that's also come up that I love that you sort of touched on is the fact that in a way, and I've had a couple conversations like this, in a way, Zoom has weirdly helped people connect a little better, right? Because, you know, we're all in each other's living spaces these days, right? We don't get to put on sort of the corporate mask, you know, so to speak, and get to just sort of say everything's fine and sort of show up and give socially acceptable answers. And, you know, we, the sort of the bridge or the divide or the differences we can kind of be as a person at home and a person at work there, you know, those, there are no barriers there anymore. Right. So it's interesting how that's happened.
Well, and one thing, when the pandemic first started, you know, I had a pretty hard and fast rule because I didn't want us to lose this level of, you know, I don't know if intimacy is the right word, but having your cameras on and actually seeing faces and still being able to, you know, read facial expressions. So I'm like, you've got to have your camera on. And everyone was fine with that. But, you know, we get into the pandemic, 2 months, 3 months, and people's cameras started going off. And I was still pushing for that hard and fast rule. And someone raised their hand and said, hey, I think it's time to show a little grace. You know, some people haven't had their hair cut, their hair colored in months, and they're not as confident to be on video. So I really think when someone speaks up and has a, you know, a statement as powerful as that, I changed my hard and fast rules because I did, you know, I did find out that people's comfort levels weren't, you know, as I, you know, okay, yep, I've got really dark hair and I normally have like reddish hair. I didn't care that people saw that, you know, during the pandemic, but others do, right? Not everybody's like you. So I think you really, as a leader, trying to navigate these trying times, you've got to adapt to and realize that, you know, some of your hard and fast, you know, you've got to take a step back and maybe change and show a little grace too.
It circles back to the same thing that you brought up earlier of like, you created that environment with your team to where someone could say and feel comfortable saying, you know, maybe reconsider. And I think that that even goes a step further back of establishing that and then being able to take whatever people are saying with, you know, full consideration.
Yeah. People have to feel comfortable. And the more you can be a transparent leader that, you know, is really removing any awkwardness or, you know, levels of uncomfortableness. It's so important. You know, it's just, it's what I believe. I think it's part of the whole servant leadership. You know, you serve first and you try to remove as many blockers from your people as possible. And that's really where the productivity comes, is by you as a leader, removing those blockers and kind of serving first.
Yeah. Yep. Or even leaning into the awkwardness sometimes, because like, let's be honest, Zoom is really awkward, and just acknowledging that and being the first one to say it, I think is just as important as trying to move past it.
Yeah. I opened my, my New Year meeting. I think it was last week. My nanny was out sick and my 4-year-old, you know, did some video bombing with his, X-Fighter Star Wars Lego behind me. And we just kept going with it. It just happens. And he zoomed right back out and finished playing. And, you know, we didn't miss a beat. And I think people appreciate that, you know, that the distractions are there. We're all experiencing them and we're in this together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's great to see you setting that example as a leader. And so one of the things we like to ask, especially for our experienced marketers, is, you know, is there a piece of what we call marketing gold that you can share? And so what we mean by that is, you know, is there a tactic that you've used successfully that, you know, maybe others should be considering, or, you know, maybe something that's a little off the beaten path?
You know, one thing that I share with my team is I don't have time to look over your shoulder. I give trust before trust is earned. Some may say that's a fault, but that's how I roll and that's who I am. And one way you earn my trust is by taking risks. And the way to measure those risks is keeping your win count ahead of your loss count. So I am very big into empowering my people to take risks. Doesn't mean you can try 10 new things, because there's still that focus piece that we're constantly talking about every week as a team. But, you know, keeping that win count ahead of that loss count. And that's something that I learned several years back from someone in our circle, Jeff, Jen Brenner, who's the CMO over at Island.
Yep.
She taught me that a long time ago. And when I was at BMC, and I've kept with it. And I really think that's a way that marketing can show results, but then also show, hey, we don't always win. So those losses we learn from, we extract information from, and then we move on. But it's keeping that win count ahead of that loss count. That's the key, and rolling the dice and taking more risks, especially now. I mean, we just, you know, the way marketing was a year ago is so different, you know, than it is now. It's harder to get people on the phone. It's harder to get people to engage with you on email. Our social feeds are flooded with so much. So you've really got to take chances and risks, you know, in your marketing efforts, and then just keep track of it.
I know what you're talking about, and I love the statement around keep your wins higher than your losses. But at the same time, it's also, again, it's about the balance, right? It's about not just showing the wins and not just learning from wins and not just pretending that we win all the time, right? I think that's really powerful, again, to be more, you know, sort of transparent about that.
Yeah, exactly. Yep, it is. And, you know, I report to the board. We have monthly board meetings. We have quarterly meetings. You know, one thing that they've always encouraged, so we have Riverside as our private equity firm, you know, is yes, tell us what we're doing right, but more importantly, tell us what we haven't done right and how that's adjusted and changed things. They're very fascinated with, you know, what's working and what isn't, and how quickly do we identify what isn't working and walk away and try something else. So it's nice to have that kind of backing and support too.
That's great.
So speaking of wins, one question that we always like to ask our guests, and this can be in a personal or professional sense, wherever you want to take it, is what does success mean for you?
You know, success for me is first and foremost, making sure I honor my 30 minutes of playtime with my kids every day. I have three children and they're all young, 8 and under. And, you know, it's a constant struggle to make sure I fit in mom time with boss time. So for me, you know, a winning day is getting in at least 30 minutes of playtime, you know, with them, sitting down and having a family dinner where we can talk about the best part of our day. That to me is most important, you know, if I hit that. Some people will say, is it getting your kids off to school? Now, for me, it's that quality time that I just outlined. And then, you know, professionally, I am two of my strengths are achievers and responsibility. So I am a box checker. If I can check off things that I've achieved for the day that I've set based upon my task list for the day, you know, even if it's just one box, you know, to me, that's winning. And one thing I ask of my team is, we've gotten away from it, but we used to every morning in teams, what are the two things, not five, what are the two things you've got to get done today? And then throughout, or for the week, sorry, we would start it every Monday. What are the two things that are going to be most impactful to the business that you need to get done this week? And throughout the week, we would hold each other accountable. That's something we're re-implementing, you know, this year to just, again, help with that focus. So at the end of the day, we feel we've contributed.
That's great. Yeah, and again, I love the focus of not making it too much, because again, I think people get so caught up in the day-to-day and sort of the natural grind of things. But I think being able to keep a couple of those things sort of top of mind helps you kind of keep that focus for your days and hopefully for the way the week shakes out without being too overcorrective and saying, oh no, I can't do this, right? You can't take this a new risk or opportunity.
Exactly. Yep.
So before we let you go, we want to ask a couple quick questions. So first, what resources would you want to share with the audience, books, blogs, podcasts, anything that you find interesting?
My current favorite podcast right now is Greg McEwen's What's Essential podcast. So he's the author of the best-selling book, The Essentialism. Mm-hmm. So it's all about minimalism, but not minimalism as we think, where you sell everything and you live in an igloo with a blanket. Like it's not that type of minimalism. You know, the way of a true essentialist involves doing less, but better, you know, so you can make the highest, you know, really the highest possible contribution in your professional and personal life. So he has guests on there that will give you tips and tricks on how you can feel a more fulfilling life by, you know, removing the noise and working through the highly distracted world that we're in. There's one other book that's on my list to read. I've read several excerpts, but I just gave a challenge to my team. It's Cal Newport's Deep Work.
Deep Work.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if any of y'all have read it, but it's pretty powerful, the difference between how much we work in shallow work versus true deep work. And deep work is where you can really lock yourself in a room, no fur babies, no kids, no cell phones, no texting, and really do the deep cognitive work that is going to be most impactful, you know, to your business. So I put a challenge on my team to set 2 to 4 hours of deep work, and I'm supporting them to remove those distractions and remove those blockers that prevent them, because that's, you hear me saying this, it's all about focus, and you can only be impactful if you're focusing. So those are two nuggets that, you know, are really top of mind, and two people that have really influenced me over the last 6 months that I would highly recommend your audience, you know, take a look into.
Absolutely. And then where can people find you on social media?
Sure. Yep. You can follow me on Twitter. So I'm just at Jen Holtfleur on Twitter. Connect with me on LinkedIn. You have my email. I'm under the executive staff on the Spherion executive page. So you're more than welcome to reach out to me through Spherion. Always looking forward to new ideas and having good conversations with folks, even if it's a virtual conversation where we have my favorite drink, a chai tea latte on hand. So always open for conversations.
That's great. Well, Jen, thank you so much for coming on the show, and thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Thank you for having me.
Sophia and I really enjoyed our conversation with Jen. It is always close to my heart when we combine data-driven marketing with empathetic leadership. If you want to reach out to us directly about this story or to inquire about sharing your own story, you can reach us at lsspodcast@circanresearch.com. Thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us for a new story next week on Long Story Short. I want to thank Circan Research for being the sponsor of our show. Circan Research fuels demand for B2B marketers looking to gain a competitive advantage. We leverage original research and data-driven content to supercharge your growth. You can find out more on our website at circanresearch.com.